Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring clinical and forensic psychologist Joni Johnston.
New allegations coming out in the Gilgo Beach murder case against Rex Heuermann, and even some more in-depth accusations against his wife, Asa Elra. News conference taking place earlier from the attorney of several of the victims coming out, making allegations and tying Rex Heuermann to other deaths, other murders of sex workers, but also painting a picture of a very active swinger-style sex life that he was involved in going back all the way to 1996. Some of the former sex workers who were not murdered have come out and said, hey, we recognize Rex Heuermann, and he's a pretty easy person to recognize. He does stand out in a crowd, so it's not, I think, easy to confuse this man with somebody else. But what we're hearing is, I think most disturbingly, that he would have sex workers over to the house and take them down to the basement and have his sex parties while his wife, Asa, stayed upstairs. But the allegations are that she was very aware of what was going on. Maybe not murder per se, but the fact that, if true, if she was aware that her husband was involved in these sort of deviant behaviors to this level, I don't know. What does that say about this? Does this show that maybe she knows more than she already is saying? Because her claims thus far have been, I had no idea. But now that's being contradicted by some of these people.
Well, it certainly does paint a slightly different picture in terms of, you're right, in terms of, you know, that I don't think any of us necessarily thought that there was a swinging life going on with a spouse knowing about it. Mm-hmm. But I do think, Tony, that there is obviously a huge gap between knowing that your husband is a swinger or wanting to have sex with other women or wanting to have sex with sex workers or whatever. Right. And then all of a sudden, you know, thinking that your husband is torturing and luring, you know, sex workers and then torturing and murdering them.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think that I'm always very hesitant, I think, to in any way connect the dots. And mm-hmm. I mean, until we have any evidence that she knew that he was luring and abducting and torturing and murdering, you know, these young women, I feel like, you know, what people do as consenting adults, mm-hmm. you know, might not be something that I would do or you would do, or as a couple we would do, you know, with our partners. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's very different. But what is concerning, and I think this is obviously, everybody's been talking about this, and you and I've talked about this. I mean, to think that Rex Heuermann's victims are only between this 2007 and 2010 era, you know, time frame, which is when the Gilgo 4 went missing. I think, I don't know that anybody has believed that at all. So to hear of concerning or unusual behaviors before that, to hear of unusual or concerning behaviors after that, I mean, those are things that we would expect.
Yeah.
Now, how concerning they were, right? Or how bad they were, I think we are still at the very beginning stages of that.
You're right. I mean, it's another stretch. I mean, going down that road, number one, is kind of going down a dark path, but then trying to connect and say that his spouse, maybe she was okay with it. Maybe this was an agreement that they had, and it's just, you know, people have odd relationships sometimes, or non-traditional relationships sometimes. But then to assume that then she had knowledge of these other accusations against him for murdering and torturing and all these other horrible things, that is, there still needs to be some dots to connect that sort of an assumption. I think what's concerning is the, I don't know, lack of transparency, the odd behavior that Asa has exhibited thus far in most of this, which, you know, kind of goes almost more to conspiratorial thinking of, well, because one's acting this way, it must mean that. And that's not always the case. Everybody does react to different things differently. And I cannot imagine what would be going through one's head, even if you did know that your husband was into those sort of sexual acts, to suddenly find out that the investigators think he's been killing all these women as well.
You know, I really can't either. And I think, you know, when I started hearing about some of these things in terms of these kind of the swinging lifestyle that he allegedly led, I mean, I am remembering, you know, interviews with a couple of other serial killer spouses who absolutely maintained their innocence. And, you know, several people would say to them things like, well, your husband was gone this many hours, or did you ever wonder why he did this or whatever? And, you know, a lot of times, well, sometimes women would say, no, I had no idea. He was on a business trip, or this is what he told me. But sometimes they say, yeah, I thought he was cheating on me. Mm-hmm. I did wonder if he was cheating on me. Meaning that, yeah, I did notice some things that were different, but we don't go to serial killer, mm-hmm. right? You don't kind of go, my husband is behaving oddly. I think it's the same thing here. I mean, and obviously this is a different situation and kind of a stranger situation if he's literally bringing women to the house and going down to the basement. But again, if she knows about it, you don't leap from that to, mm-hmm. you know, luring and torturing and killing young women.
Sure.
And that would be a complete shock to find that out. And it is so hard to look from the outside looking in, to look at these situations. And I do feel like, I don't know how you feel, Tony, but I feel there have been so many, I think, social media ramifications recently, mm-hmm. it seems like, in some of these cases, yeah. where there have been these collateral victims because, yeah. you know, groups have kind of gotten together and decided this or that, or this means this or that means that. And I do think, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday in an interview, and I said, you know, yeah, I can talk about psychology and that's important,
yeah.
but evidence always trumps psychology in the courtroom,
sure.
and
sure.
it should. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to kind of always, you know, for us to always kind of keep that perspective, mm-hmm. that, okay, maybe we now know that they're, you know, their lifestyle as a couple was different mm-hmm. than we imagined it. And that maybe Rex was doing these things and his wife knew about it. Did she like it? Did she care? Did she not like it and put up with it? We don't know. Mm-hmm. Until she tells us that, we don't know. But that is a far stretch, as you just pointed out, from, yes, she knew he was also, you know, a sexual sadist and was luring and killing prostitutes. We have no evidence of that.
Sure. I completely agree. Try and break down a little bit of the psychology of someone like a Rex Huerman, someone who, if he is guilty of these crimes, he was a successful architect. He had a family. He has a wife. By all accounts, things were going okay in the world of the Huermans prior to these allegations and prior to these charges. How does one live a life like that, though? How does one have this other completely different compartmentalized life where they're, I mean, it'd be one thing even to do the swinger sex thing and be able to kind of shut off the rest of your life from that and not have that affecting things. But to add that and add the, all these possible murders to it, how does one do that? How during the day or when you're home for dinner with your family or what have you, are these thoughts not coming up in your mind or not coming up in the mind of Rex Huerman? Is it literally that compartmentalized and it's only accessed when he wants to? Is that how one can live a seemingly normal life if you're doing these sort of acts on the side?
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind. Number yeah. one is, can we ever really identify or understand it? Probably not, mm-hmm. because it is so bizarre to us. And so the best parallel or the best example that I can think of is to think of the different hats we wear in interacting with different people every day. You know, meaning I'm not going to talk to my boss the same way I'm going to talk to my spouse, or I'm not going to interact the same way. We all wear different roles, is what I'm saying. And we all are used to doing that. I can remember years ago, my mom died very suddenly. I just signed a contract to write a book, and I literally somehow managed to take all that trauma and grief and put it away for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about my mom that much during then. And then the minute the book was, you know, was over, I just kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. So somehow I managed to put all those feelings and stuff away. I think when you talk about somebody like Rex Huerman, this is somebody whose compartmentalization, their ability to just segment and separate different parts of their lives, is like our normal role wearing times 100 million, mm-hmm. where it really is like, this is one drawer I pull out and open and close. Then I close it back up and I go and I open this other drawer and put out this hat on. And those two don't really interact with each other. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing I think in terms of their ability to act different ways in different circumstances. And then the question is, well, how can you be somebody who cares about your wife or cares about your daughter and then do these horrible things to other women?
Yeah.
And I think that is a different rationalization. And that is more like, well, these are different women. They're almost like objects to me. you know, they're not women in the same way that my wife is a woman mm-hmm. or that my daughter's a woman. There's a lot of rationalization and justification that goes on, and it's distorted. Yeah. It makes no sense. It's not logical. But in their head, it's like they're not the same mm-hmm. because the person that they're luring to rape and torture and murder, it really is like a possession or an object. Mm-hmm. It's not a person. And so I don't look at this person who I've now tortured and murdered in any way. There's no comparison to my wife or my mom or my daughter. So I have no guilt about that because there's no parallel.
It's almost like a different species.
It is. Yeah. It's a dehumanization. It absolutely is.
I'm glad I can't fully understand that, but I can understand it on the level that you just talked about it. But I don't know how one can live that way or feel that way. And that's probably a good thing and why most of us aren't doing things like this. Yes.
I completely agree with you, Tony. I do. It's like theoretically we can understand it, mm-hmm. but emotionally, yeah. it would be scary to think that we really could.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.